Good evening. You're listening to KRBD Ketchikan and reading the classics. I'm Rebecca Brown, your host for this evening. We will be reading a two-parter, an abridged two-parter, because it is too long to fit even into two episodes. But it's this wonderful book called The Best Christmas Pageant Ever by Barbara Robinson. Publishers Weekly calls it one of the best Christmas books ever. It was recommended to me by my wonderful coworker, Amy, and it is read with the excellent permission of the publisher, HarperCollins. So, like I said, this is an abridged version, but I hope you still enjoy it. Mother didn't expect to have anything to do with the Christmas pageant, except to make me and my little brother Charlie be in it. We didn't want to. And to make my father go and see it. He didn't want to. Every year he said the same thing. I've seen the Christmas pageant. You haven't seen this year's Christmas pageant, Mother would tell him. Charlie is a shepherd this year. Charlie was a shepherd last year. No, you go on and go. I'm just going to go put my bathrobe on and sit by the fire and relax. There's never anything different about the Christmas pageant. There's something different this year, Mother said. What? Charlie is wearing your bathrobe. So that year my father went to see his bathrobe, he said. Actually, he went every year, but it was always a struggle, and Mother said that it was her contribution to the Christmas pageant, getting my father to go to it. But then she got stuck with the whole thing when Mrs. George Armstrong fell and broke her leg. We knew about this as soon as it happened, because Mrs. Armstrong only lived a block and a half away. We heard the siren and saw the ambulance and watched the policeman carry her out of the house on a stretcher. Call Mr. Armstrong at his work, she yelled at the policeman. Shut off the stove under my potatoes. Inform the lady's aide that I won't be at the meeting. One of the neighbor women called out, Helen, are you in much pain? And Mrs. Armstrong yelled back, yes, terrible. Don't let those children tear up my privet hedge. Even in pain, Mrs. Armstrong could still give orders. She was so good at giving orders that she just naturally was the head of anything she belonged to, and at church she did everything but preach. Most of all, she ran the Christmas pageant every year, and here she was 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, flat on her back. I don't know what they'll do now about the pageant, Mother said. But the pageant wasn't the only problem. Mrs. Armstrong was also chairman of the Ladies' Aid Bazaar and coordinator of the Women's Society potluck supper, and there was a lot of telephoning back and forth to see who would take over those jobs. Mother had a list of names, and while she was calling people about the Ladies' Aid Bazaar, Mrs. Homer McCarthy was trying to call Mother about the potluck supper. But Mrs. McCarthy got somebody else to do that, and Mother got somebody else to do the bazaar. So the only thing left was the Christmas pageant. And Mother got stuck with that. I could run the potluck supper with one hand tied behind my back, Mother told us. All you have to do is make sure everybody doesn't bring meatloaf. But the Christmas pageant? Our Christmas pageant isn't what you'd call four-star entertainment. Mrs. Armstrong breaking her leg was the only unexpected thing that ever happened to it. The script is standard. The inn, the stable, the shepherds, the star. And so are the costumes, and so is the casting. Primary kids are angels, intermediate kids are shepherds, big boys are wise men. Elmer Hopkins, the minister's son, has been Joseph for as long as I can remember, and my friend Alice Wendelkin is Mary because she's so smart, so neat and clean, and most of all, so holy looking. All the rest of us are in the angel choir, lined up according to height because nobody can sing parts. As a matter of fact, nobody can sing. We're strictly a no-talent outfit except for a girl named Alberta Bottles who whistles. Last year, Alberta whistled, What Child Is This? For a change of pace, but nobody liked it, especially Mrs. Bottles, because Alberta put too much into it and ran out of air and passed out cold on the manger in the middle of the third verse. Aside from that, though, it's always just the Christmas story, year after year, with people shuffling around in bathrobes and bedsheets and sharp wings. Well, my father said once Mother got put in charge of it, here's your chance. Why don't you cancel the pageant and show movies? Movies of what? Mother said. I don't know. Fred Stamper has 5 big reels of Yellowstone National Park. What does Yellowstone National Park have to do with Christmas? Mother asked. I know a good movie, Charlie said. We had it at school. It shows a heart operation and two kids got sick. Never mind, Mother said to my brother. I guess you all think you're pretty funny. But the Christmas pageant is a tradition, and I don't plan to do anything different. Of course, nobody even thought about the Herdmans in connection with the Christmas pageant. Most of us spent all week in school being pounded and poked and pushed around by the Herdmans, and we looked forward to Sunday as a real day of rest. Once a month, the whole Sunday school would go to church for the first 15 minutes of service and do something special. sing a song or act out a parable or recite Bible verses. Usually the little kids sang Jesus Loves Me, which was all they were up to. But when my brother Charlie was in with the little kids, his teacher thought of something different to do. She had everybody write down on a piece of paper what they liked best about Sunday school or draw a picture of what they liked best. And when we all got into church, she stood up in front of the congregation and said, "Today some of our youngest boys and girls are going to tell what Sunday school means to them. Betsy, what do you have on your paper?" Betsy Cathcart stood up and said, "What I like best about Sunday school is the good feeling I get when I go there." I don't think she wrote that down at all, but it sounded terrific, of course. One kid said he liked hearing all the Bible stories. Another kid said, "I like learning songs about Jesus." 8 or 9 little kids stood up and said what they liked, and it was always something good about Jesus or God or cheerful friends or the nice teacher. Finally, the teacher said, "I think we have time for one more. Charlie, what can you tell us about Sunday school?" My little brother Charlie stood up, and he didn't even have to look at his paper. "What I like best about Sunday school," he said, "is that there aren't any Herdmans here." Well, the Sunday school teacher should have stuck with Jesus Loves Me, because everybody forgot all the nice churchy things the other kids said and just remembered what Charlie said about the Herdmans. When we went to pick him up after church, his teacher told us, "I'm sure there are many things that Charlie likes about Sunday school. Maybe he will tell you what some of them are." She smiled at all of us, but you could tell that she was really mad. On the way home, I asked Charlie, "What are some of the other things you like that she was talking about?" He shrugged. "I like all the other stuff," she said, to write down. "But when she said to mention what we like best, I like there being no Herdman's best." "That's not a very Christian sentiment," my father said. "Maybe not, but it's a very practical one," mother told him. Last year, Charlie had spent the whole second grade being black and blue because he had to sit next to Leroy Herdman. In the end, it was Charlie's fault that the Herdman showed up in church. For 3 days in a row, Leroy Herdman stole the dessert from Charlie's lunchbox, and finally Charlie just gave up trying to do anything about it. "Oh, go on and take it," he said. "I don't care. I get all the dessert I want in Sunday school." Leroy wanted to know more about that. "What kind of dessert?" he said. "Chocolate cake," Charlie told him, "and candy bars and cookies and Kool-Aid. We get refreshments all the time, all we want." "You're a liar," Leroy said. Leroy was right. We got jelly beans at Easter and punch and cookies on Children's Day, but that was it. "And we get ice cream too," Charlie went on, "and donuts and popcorn balls." "Who gives it to you?" Leroy wants to know. "The minister," Charlie said. He didn't know what else to say. Of course, that was the wrong time to tell the Herdmans if you wanted them to stay away. Of course, sure enough, the very next Sunday, there they were, slouching into Sunday school, eyes peeled for the refreshments. "Where do you get the cake?" Ralph asked the Sunday school superintendent, and Mr. Grady said, "Well, son, I don't know about any cake, but they're collecting food packages out in the kitchen." What he meant was the canned stuff that we brought in every year at Thanksgiving as a present for the orphans' home. It was just our bad luck that the Herdmans picked that Sunday to come, because when they saw all the cans of spaghetti and beans and grape drink and peanut butter, they figured there might be some truth to what Charlie said about refreshments. And so they stayed. They didn't sing any hymns or say any prayers, but they did make a little money, because I saw Imogene snake a handful of coins out of the collection basket when it went past her. At the end of the morning, Mr. Grady came to every class to make an announcement. "We'll be starting rehearsals soon for our Christmas pageant," he said, "and next week after service we'll all gather in the back of the church to decide who will play in the main roles. But of course we want every boy and girl in our Sunday school to take part in the pageant, so be sure your parents know that you'll be staying a little later next Sunday." Mr. Grady made the same speech every year, so he didn't get any wild applause. Besides, as I said, we all knew what part we were going to play anyhow. Alice Wendelkin must have been a little bit worried, though, because she turned around to me with a sticky smile on her face and said, "I hope you're going to be in the angel choir again. You're so good in the angel choir." But what she meant was, "I hope you won't be getting married just because your mother's running the pageant." She didn't have to worry. I didn't want to be married. I didn't want to be in the angel choir either, but everybody had to be something. All of a sudden, Imogene Herdman dug me in the ribs with her elbow. She has the sharpest elbows of anybody I ever knew. "What's a pageant?" she said. "It's a play," I said, and for the first time that day, except when she saw the collection basket, Imogene looked interested. All the Herdmans are big moviegoers, though they never pay their own way. One or two of them start a fight in the box office at the theater while the others slip in. They get their popcorn the same way, and then they spread out all over the place so the main manager can never find them before the picture's over. "What's the play about?" Imogene asked. "It's about Jesus," I said. everything here is," she muttered. So I figured Imogene didn't care much about the Christmas pageant, but I was wrong. Mrs. Armstrong, who was still trying to run things from her hospital bed, said that the same people always got the same parts. "But it's important to give everybody a chance," she told Mother over the telephone. "Let me tell you what I do." Mother sighed and turned the heat off under the pork chops. "All right, Helen," she said. Mrs. Armstrong called Mother at least every other day, and she always called at supper time. "Don't let me interrupt your supper," she always said, and then went right ahead and did it anyway while my father paced up and down the hall saying things under his breath about Mrs. Armstrong. "Here's what I do," Mrs. Armstrong said. "I get them all together and tell them about the rehearsals and that they must be on time and pay close attention. And then I tell them that the main parts are Mary and Joseph and the wise men and the angel of the Lord. And then I always remind them that there are no small parts, only small actors." "Do they understand what that means?" Mother asked. "Oh, yes," Mrs. Armstrong said. Later, Mother asked me if I knew what that meant about small parts and small actors. I didn't really know. None of us did. "I thought so," Mother said. "It doesn't mean that at all. It really means that every single person in the pageant is just as important as every other single person, and that the littlest baby angel is just as important as Mary." "Go and tell that to Alice Wendelkin," I said, and Mother told me not to be so fresh. She didn't get very mad, though, because she knew I was right. You could have a Christmas pageant without any baby angels, but you could not have one without a Mary. Mrs. Armstrong knew it, too. "I always start with Mary," she told Mother over the telephone. "I tell them that we must choose our Mary carefully, because Mary was the mother of Jesus." "I know that," Mary said, wanting to get off the telephone and cook the pork chops. Mrs. Armstrong called Mother two more times that week to tell her that people could hem up the costumes but could not cut them, and to tell her to not let the angel choir wear lipstick, and by Sunday, Mother was already sick of the whole thing. After church, we all filed into the back seven pews, along with two or three Sunday school teachers who were supposed to keep everybody quiet. It was a terrible time to try to keep everybody quiet. All the little kids were tired, and all the big kids were hungry, and all the mothers wanted to go home and cook dinner, and all the fathers wanted to do was go home and watch the football game on TV. "Now, this won't take us very long," Mother told us. "First, I'm going to tell you about the rehearsals," Mother said. "We'll have our rehearsals on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. We're only going to have five rehearsals, so you must try to be present at every one." "But what if I get sick?" asked the little kid in the front pew. "You won't get sick," Mother told him, which was exactly what she told Charlie that morning when Charlie said he didn't want to be a shepherd and would be sick to his stomach if she made him one. Mother said, looking a little cross, "Now, we all know what kind of a person Mary was. She was quiet and gentle and kind, and the little girl who plays Mary should try to be that kind of a person. I know that many of you would like to be Mary in our pageant, but of course we can only have one Mary. So I'll ask for volunteers, and then we'll all decide together which girl should get the part." That was pretty safe to say, since the only person who ever raised her hand was Alice Wendelkin. But Alice just sat there, chewing on a piece of her hair and looking down at the floor, and the only person who raised her hand this time was Imogene Herdman. "Did you have a question, Imogene?" Mother asked. I guess that was the only reason she could think of for Imogene to have her hand up. "No," Imogene said. "I want to be Mary." She looked back over her shoulder, and Ralph wants to be Joseph.
"Yeah," Ralph said.
Mother just stared at them. It was like a detective movie when the nice little gray-haired lady sticks a gun in the bank window and says, "Give me all your money," and you can't believe it. Mother could not believe this. "Well," she said after a minute, "we want to be sure that everybody has a chance. Does anybody else want to volunteer for Joseph?" No one did. No one else ever did, especially not Elmer Hopkins. But he couldn't do anything about it because he was the minister's son. One year, he didn't volunteer to be Joseph, and neither did anybody else, and afterward I heard Reverend Hopkins talking to Elmer out in the hall. "You're going to be Joseph," Reverend Hopkins said, and that's it. "But I don't want to be Joseph," Elmer told him. "I'm too big, and I feel dumb up there, and all those little kids give me a pain in the neck." "I can understand that," Reverend Hopkins said. "I can even sympathize, but till somebody else volunteers for Joseph, you're stuck with it." "Nobody's ever going to do that," Elmer said. "I even offered Grady Baker 50 cents to be Joseph, and he wouldn't do it. I'm going to have to be Joseph for the rest of my life." "Cheer up," Reverend Hopkins told him. "Maybe somebody will turn up." I'll bet he didn't think that somebody would be Ralph Herdman. "All right," Mother said. "Ralph will be our Joseph. Now, does anybody else want to volunteer for Mary?" Mother looked all around, trying to catch somebody's eye. Anybody's eye? "Janet, Roberta, Alice, don't you want to volunteer this year?"
"No," Alice said so low you could hardly hear her. "I don't want to."
Nobody volunteered to be wise men either, except for Leroy Claude and Ollie Herdman. So there
was my mother stuck with a Christmas pageant full of Herdmans in the main roles. There was one Herdman left over and one main role left over, and you didn't have to be very smart to figure out that Gladys was going to be the angel of the Lord. What do I have to do? Gladys wanted to know. The angel of the Lord was the one who brought the good news to the shepherds, Mother said. Right away, all the shepherds began to wiggle around in their seats, figuring out any good news that Gladys brought them would come with a smack in the teeth. Charlie's friend, Hobie Carmichael, raised his hand and said, I can't be a shepherd. We're going to Philadelphia. Why didn't you say so before? Mother asked. I forgot. Another kid said, my mother doesn't want me to be a shepherd. Why not? Mother said. I don't know. She just said, don't be a shepherd. One kid was honest. Gladys Herdman hits too hard, he said. Why, Gladys isn't going to hit anybody, Mother said. What an idea. The angel just visits the shepherds in the fields and tells them that Jesus is born. And hits them, said the kid. Of course he was right. You could just picture Gladys whamming shepherds left and right, but Mother said that was perfectly ridiculous. I don't want to hear another word about it, she said. No shepherds may quit or get sick, she added before the kid in the front pew could ask. While everybody was leaving, Mother grabbed Alice Wendelken by the arm and said, Alice, why in the world didn't you raise your hand to be Mary? I don't know, Alice said, looking mad, but I knew. I'd heard Imogene Herdman telling Alice what would happen to her if she dared to volunteer. All the ordinary, everyday Herdman things like clonking you on the head and drawing pictures all over your homework papers and putting worms in your coat pocket. I don't care, Alice told her. I don't care what you do. I'm always Mary in the pageant. And next spring, Imogene went on, squinching up her eyes, when the pussy willows come out, I'll stick a pussy willow so far down into your ear that nobody can reach it, and it will sprout there, and it will grow and grow, and you'll spend the rest of your life with a pussy willow bush growing out of your ear. You had to admire her. That was the worst thing any of them had ever thought up to do. Of course, some people might not think that that could happen, but it could. Ollie Herdman did it once. He got this terrible earache in school, and when a nurse looked down into his ear, her little lighted tube, she yelled so loudly that it could be heard all the way down the hall. He's got something growing down there, she hollered. They had to take Ollie to the hospital and put him under and dig out this sprouted pussy willow from his ear. So that was why Alice kept her mouth shut about being Mary. You know she wouldn't do all those things, she said, I told Alice as we walked home. Yes, she would, Alice said. Herdmans will do anything, but your mother should have told them no. Somebody should put Imogene out of the pageant and all the rest of them too. They'll do something terrible and ruin the whole thing. I thought that she was probably right, and so did lots of other people. And for 2 or 3 days, all anybody could talk about was that this was the Herdmans that were going to be Mary and Joseph and all. Mrs. Homer McCarthy called Mother to say that she had been thinking and thinking about it, and if the Herdmans wanted to participate in our Christmas celebration, why didn't we let them hand out programs at the door? Well, we don't have programs for the Christmas pageant, Mother said. Well, maybe we ought to get them printed and put the Herdmans in charge of that. Alice's mother told the lady's aide that it was sacrilegious to let Imogene Herdman be Mary. Somebody we never heard of called up Mother on the telephone and said her name was Hazelbeck and that she lived on Sproul Hill. And was it true that Imogene Herdman was going to be Mary, the mother of Jesus in the church play? Yes, Mother said, Imogene is going to be Mary in our Christmas play. And the rest of them too? The lady asked. Yes, Ralph is going to be Joseph and the others are the wise men and the angel of the Lord. You must be crazy, this Mrs. Hazelbeck said to Mother. I live next door to that outfit, and they're yelling and screaming, and their insane cat and their garage door going up and down and up and down all day long. And let me tell you, you're in for a rowdy time. Some people said it wasn't fair for a whole family who didn't even go to our church to barge in and take over the pageant. My father said somebody better lock up the Women's Society Silver Service. My mother just said that she would rather be in the hospital with Mrs. Armstrong. But then the flower committee took a pot of geranium to Mrs. Armstrong and told her what was going on, and she nearly fell out of her bed, traction bars and all. I feel personally responsible, she said. Whatever happens, I accept the blame. If I had been up and around and doing my duty, this never would have happened. And that made my mother so mad she couldn't see straight. If she'd been up and around, it wouldn't have happened, Mother said. That woman, she must be surprised that the sun is still coming up every morning without her to supervise the sunrise. Well, let me tell you. Don't tell me, my father said. I'm on your side. So that shut everybody up, even Alice's mother, and the next Wednesday, we started rehearsals.
The first pageant rehearsal was usually about as much fun as a 3-hour ride on the school bus, and just as noisy and crowded. This rehearsal, though, was different. Everybody shut up and settled right away for fear of missing something awful that the Herdmans might do. They got there 10 minutes late, sliding into the room like a bunch of outlaws about to shoot up a saloon. When Leroy passed Charlie, he knuckled him behind the ear, and one little primary girl yelled at Gladys as she went by. But Mother had said that she was going to ignore everything except for blood, and since the primary kid wasn't bleeding and neither was Charlie, nothing happened. Mother said, "And here's the Herdman family. We're glad to see you all," which was probably the biggest lie that she ever said right out loud in church. Imogen smiled, the Herdman smile, we called it, sly and sneaky. And there they sat, the closest thing to criminals that we knew about, and they were going to represent the best and most beautiful. No wonder everyone was so worked up. Mother started to separate everyone into angels and shepherds and guests at the end, but right away she ran into trouble. "Who were the shepherds?" Leroy Herdman wanted to ask. "Where did they come from?" Ollie Herdman didn't know about what a shepherd was, or anyway, that's what he said. "And what was the inn?" Claude asked. "What's an inn?" "It's like a motel," somebody told him, "where people get to go spend the night." "What people?" Claude asked. "Jesus?" "Oh, honestly," Annis Wendelkin grumbled, "Jesus wasn't even born yet. Mary and Joseph went there." "Why?" Ralph asked. "What happened first?" Imogene hollered at my mother. "Begin at the beginning." That really scared me, because the beginning would be the book of Genesis, where it says in the beginning. And if we were going to have to start with the book of Genesis, we'd never get through. The thing was, the Herdmans didn't know anything about the Christmas story. They knew that Christmas was Jesus's birthday, but everything else was news to them. The shepherds, the wise men, the star, the stable, the crowded inn. It was hard to believe. At least, it was hard for me to believe. Alice Wendelkin said she didn't have any trouble believing it. "How would they find out about the Christmas story?" she said. "They don't even know what a Bible is. Look at what Gladys did to that Bible last week." While Imogene was snitching money from the collection plate in my class, Gladys and Ollie drew mustaches and tails on all the disciples in the primary grade illustrated Bible. "They never went to church in their whole lives until your little brother told them we had refreshments," Alice said, "and all you ever hear about Christmas in school is how to make ornaments out of aluminum foil. So how could they know about the Christmas story?" She was right. Of course they might have read about it, but they never read anything except for Amazing Comics. And they might have heard about it on TV, except that Ralph paid 65 cents for their TV at a garage sale, and you couldn't see anything on it unless somebody held it onto the antenna. Even then, you couldn't see much. The only other way for them to hear about the Christmas story was from their parents, and I guess Mr. Herdman never got around to it before he climbed on the railroad train and was gone. And it was pretty clear that Mrs. Herdman had given up trying to ever tell them anything at all. And so they just didn't know. And Mother said that she'd better begin by reading the Christmas story from the Bible. This was a pain in the neck for most of us, because we knew the whole thing backward and forward and never had to be told anything except for who we were supposed to be and where we were supposed to stand. Joseph and Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. "Pregnant?" yelled Ralph Herdman. Well, that stirred things up. All the big kids began to giggle, and all the little kids wanted to know what was so funny, and Mother had to hammer on the floor with a blackboard pointer. "That's enough, Ralph," she said, and went on with the story. "I don't think that's a very nice thing to say about Mary being pregnant," Alice whispered to me. "But she was," I pointed out. "In a way, though, I agreed with her. It sounded too ordinary. Anybody could be pregnant. Great with child sounded better for Mary." "I'm not supposed to talk about people being pregnant." Alice folded her hands together in her lap and pinched her lips together. "I'd better tell my mother." "Tell her what?" "That your mother, she's talking about things like that in church. My mother might not want me to be here." I was pretty sure she would do it. She wanted to be Mary, and she was so mad at Mother. I knew it too, and she would make it sound worse than it was, and Mrs. Wendelkin would get madder than she already was. Mrs. Wendelkin didn't even want cats to have kittens or birds to lay eggs, and she wouldn't let Alice play with anybody who had 2 rabbits. But there wasn't much I could do about it except pinch Alice, which I did. She yelped, and Mother separated us and made me sit beside Imogene Herdman and sent Alice to sit in the middle of the baby angels. I wasn't crazy to sit next to Imogene. After all, I'd spent my whole life staying away from Imogene, but she didn't even notice me. Not much, anyway. "Shut up," was all she said. "I want to hear her." I couldn't believe it. Among other things, the Herdmans were famous for never sitting still and never paying attention to anyone. Teachers, parents, their own or anybody else's, the truant officer, the police, yet here they were, eyes glued to my mother, taking in every word. "What's that?" they would yell whenever they didn't understand the language, or when mother read about there being no room at the inn. Imogene's jaw dropped when she sat up in her seat and said, "My God," she said, "not even for Jesus." I saw Alice purse her lips together, so I knew that was something else that Mrs. Wendelken would hear about, swearing in the church. "Well, now, after all," Mother explained, "nobody knew that the baby was going to turn out to be Jesus." "You said that Mary knew," Ralph said. "Why didn't she tell them?" "I would have told them," Imogene put in. "Boy, would I have told them. What was the matter with Joseph that he didn't tell them? Hurt her being pregnant and everything?" she grumbled. "What was that they laid the baby in?" Leroy said. "The manger, is that like a bed? Why would they have a bed in the barn?" "That's just the point," Mother said, "but they didn't have a bed in the barn, so Mary and Joseph had to use whatever there was. And what would you do if you had a new baby and no bed to put a baby in?" "We put Gladys in a bureau drawer," Imogene volunteered. "Well, there you are," Mother said, blinking a little. "You didn't have a bed for Gladys, so you had to use something else." "Oh, we had a bed," Ralph said, "only Ollie was still in it and he wouldn't get out. He didn't like Gladys." He elbowed Ollie. "Remember how you didn't like Gladys?" "I thought that was pretty smart of Ollie, not to like Gladys right off the bat." "Anyway," Mother said, "Mary and Joseph used the manger. A manger is a large wooden feeding trough for animals." "What about the wadded-up clothes?" Claude wanted to know.
"The what?" Mother said.
"You read about it. She wrapped him in wadded-up clothes."
"Swaddling clothes," Mother sighed.
"Long ago, people used to wrap their babies very tightly in big pieces of material so they couldn't move around. It made the babies feel cozy and comfortable." "I bet it probably just made the babies mad. Till then, I didn't know what swaddling clothes were either, and they sounded terrible, and I wasn't too surprised when Imogene got all excited about that."
"You mean they tied him up and put him in a feed box?" she said.
"Where was the child welfare?"
"The child welfare was always checking over on the Herdmans. I'll bet if the child welfare ever found that Gladys was tied up in a bureau drawer, they would have done something about it."
"And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them," Mother went on, "and then the glory of the Lord shone around them, and Shazam!" Gladys yelled, flinging her arms and smacking the kid next to her.
"What?" Mother said. Mother never read Amazing Comics.
"Out of the black night, with horrible vengeance, the mighty Marvo."
"I don't know what you're talking about," Gladys' mother said. "This is the angel of the Lord who comes to the shepherds in the fields and..."
"Out of nowhere, right?" Gladys said. "In the black night, right?"
"Well," Mother looked unhappy, "in a way."
So Gladys sat back down, looking very satisfied if at least this was one part of the Christmas story that made sense to her.
"Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea," Mother went on reading, "behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem saying..."
"That's you," Leroy said, "and Claude and Ollie, so pay close attention."
"What does it mean, wise men?" Ollie wanted to know. "Were they like school teachers?"
"No, dumbbell," Claude said. "It means like the President of the United States."
Mother looked surprised and a little pleased, like she did when Charlie finally learned the times tables up to 5.
"Why, that's very close, Claude," she said. "Actually, they were kings."
"Well, it's about time," Imogene muttered. "Maybe they'll tell the innkeeper where to get off and to get that baby out of the barn."
They saw the young child with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshipped him and presented him with gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh.
"What's that stuff?" Leroy wanted to know.
"Precious oils," Mother said, "and fragrant resins."
"Oil?" Imogene hollered. "What kind of cheap king hands out oil for a present? You better get presents from the firemen."
Sometimes the herdmen got Christmas presents at the fireman's party, but the Santa Claus always had to feel all around the packages to make sure they weren't getting any bows and arrows or dart guns or something like that. Imogene usually got sewing cards or jigsaw puzzles, and she never liked them, and I guess she figured out that they were better than oil.
Well, we'll finish that there for this week. We'll pick up next week with our second part of our story of the best Christmas pageant ever with Barbara Robinson as our author. We are reading this with the publisher's permission from Harper's Collin, and we're thankful for that. You've been listening to Reading the Classics and KRBD Ketchikan.